Broadcasting from Youngstown, Ohio, this is the MV Red Podcast, the show where we talk about news and politics impacting the Mahoning Valley, the state of Ohio, and the USA. If you want to subscribe to our podcast, find us on your favorite podcast streaming app or visit our website, www.mvred.com. If you want to share your opinion with us, please email info@mvred.com, as we would love to hear from you. Now, let's get things started. Here are your hosts, Michael Metzinger and Dane Davis.
Hey, Michael, how's it going?
Good, how you doing?
I'm eating some Aldi's brand mini raviolis. They're called Bella Italia. I think that means beautiful Italian, and they certainly are pretty beautiful. We stockpiled when the coronavirus was first happening. We went to Aldi's. It was like my first time going to Aldi's, and we bought a bunch of food and stuff. And so, I got some raviolis, and now we're just like, you know, we're eating down our stockpiles, right?
Is the food any good?
You know, for mini raviolis, it's pretty good. Personally, I'm a big fan of the mini ravioli. I think it gives you the perfect ratio between sauce and ravioli. But I'd say this is at least as good as Chef Boyardee. And probably for like, you know, 3 pennies, right? If you've ever been to Aldi's, things, stuff's really cheap there. I don't go there often, but it's pretty nifty.
The real question is, I'm only asking because I don't know. Are you Italian at all?
Am I Italian at all?
Yeah.
That's an interesting question. Do I look at that? No, I am not talking at all.
I was going to say, because I don't know many Italians. You know, I'm only a quarter Italian. I don't know many Italians who eat Chef Boyardee or whatever, Bella, whatever that's called.
Bella Italia, first of all.
Bella Italia.
I'm
beautiful. What? Beautiful Italy. Italian. I should know that.
Yeah, you should know that. I respect the Italian people. I think Italy's a great country. They haven't really been good at fighting wars since the Roman Empire failed, but you know, they've got a lot of art, history, and culture, and they're a great country. I love the Italians. Italians are great. But I am not Italian. I am like the least Italian human being on this planet. So sorry, folks.
That's fair. So welcome everybody to episode 18. We've made it this far.
Oh God.
The MV Red Podcast. Who would have thought we would make it 18 episodes?
Yeah, I wouldn't have. I definitely wouldn't have. I'm still pretty surprised.
Pretty remarkable. Anyhow, we decided to do a second show within a week period, which is pretty crazy on our part. That's the first time that's ever happened. But we wanted to kind of recap the Republican National Convention that concluded on Thursday. And obviously there's been additional civil unrest that's taken place in the country, particularly in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and continuing in Portland, Oregon. So we want to talk about that. I want to talk some polling and then some random items, one of which is an article that was posted in the Washington Examiner either today or yesterday from Selena Zito. Wait a second. I think I butchered that.
I think that's an Italian name.
I think it is too.
Here you are talking about how Italian you are. You can't even Selena Zito. Isn't there a baked Italian dish named Zito? Right? That's easy.
Zitty.
That's like
Zitty.
That's Zitty. Yeah. You just replace the I with an O. Look. Keep going. Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. But.
No. Yeah, no. I don't mind. So she wrote about my hometown or my home county, Mahoning County, possibly going red this
MV red. It's
MV
your
red.
Fantasy. It's your
My
fantasy,
dream is possibly right? coming true, which is remarkable. So we're going to talk about that. And I also want to just touch briefly on Christina Hagan, because the more I read into the tea leaves, the more I think she actually does have a legitimate shot. And I think, Dane, we were messaging earlier in the week. I think it was you.
Yeah.
And maybe you hinted that maybe there's something internally, perhaps it showed it maybe like single digits or something like that, which – I'm beginning to think that might be the case, especially if the National Republican Party is making a push for Trump and Mahoning. Maybe they think they could that will help Christina Hagan's chances.
Yeah, there's something certainly going on there,
which is also exciting.
Yeah, I also want to talk about Bob Hagan.
Oh yeah,
if we get a chance, because there's a new development in Bob Hagan. But that could be the very end. You know, that's like your dessert. You make it through another one of these episodes, and God, I don't know how you do. you get to hear me talk about Bob Hagen, which I'm sure like there's millions of people out there that want to hear that. So there you go.
Very good. We'll definitely touch on Bob Hagen, who is, I do want to add, has no relation whatsoever to Christina Hagen. They are on two completely ends of the political spectrum. Bob Hagen, of course, his brother, I believe it's Tim, was a Cuyahoga County commissioner maybe and ran unsuccessfully for governor. I think maybe against Bob Taft back in, was that 2000, 2004, something like that?
2002. That's right.
2002. Okay. So I'm not too far off. So let's begin talking about the RNC, and I'm just going to touch briefly on the ratings because, full disclosure, I touched on them last week in the Democrat National Convention, and they were down, and they were also down on the big six networks for the Republican convention as well. Totals for the first four nights were 69 million, down from 95 million. In 2016. Now, I did not pull the information out there. I do know from seeing some of the Republican, spin, talking points, what have you, they are also, they included digital and they compared it to DNC, which would have been the big six networks, C-SPAN, the other networks in digital. And they're saying that the Republicans actually ended up having higher ratings than the Democrat. Regardless, it seems like the ratings were down compared to 4 years ago for whatever reason. I'm not sure, but I will say this. I've been critical of the Republican Party in terms of their conventions in the past. I think I'm of the belief the Democrats in the past have done a better job of producing conventions and reaching their target audience and doing a really good job of rallying the base. This time around, I must give the Republican Party credit. I thought they did a much, much better job than the Democrats. I read a quote, and I want to mention this, and I'm not sure. I wish I had it handy. I think it was from the Politico, some pundit of some sort, said something to the effect of the Democrats ran a Zoom convention when Americans are sick of Zoom meetings because of the pandemic. And the Republicans just, I think, blew them out of the water, did a really nice job with the optics. One would have to believe Trump, the apprentice NBC guy, had something to do with it. But I do want to give them credit because I thought they did a really nice job from that perspective. And we'll probably talk about some of the speakers here in a minute. But I just wanted to give credit. I was pleasantly surprised as somebody who's watched a number of conventions over the years to see how they did. And I know on me personally, I was pretty fired up after the convention concluded.
Yeah. No, I thought they did a good job overall. The Democrats have everybody in Hollywood supporting them, right? So every convention they have like all these celebrities really coming out and supporting them. And I think that over-reliance on celebrities kind of worked against the Democrats because it just seemed kind of, annoying, I guess, in this era of Zoom meetings. And they really went heavy into the Zoom stuff. It had weird optics, weird vibes. Weird aesthetics, right? Aesthetics are a really under-discussed topic out there, but people don't want to look at something that's ugly. People want to look at something that's captivating, it's beautiful, etc. And if you compare the aesthetics, right, at the end of Biden's speech, he goes out to like a parking lot where there are a bunch of cars and there are people, they're all socially distanced and spaced. And then they're watching fireworks and there are like seven fireworks, right? It's like somebody got 40 bucks and went to like the Phantom fireworks and bought what they could. And then you compare the Trump speech where it was in front of the White House, right? The optics of the White House, whether or not I'm not going to make an opinion on whether that's legal or not. I think it's irrelevant. But the optics were beautiful with all the flags and the White House. And then at the end, they did this massive fireworks show or the Washington Memorial or Monument. And they did Trump, right? 2020 in fireworks. And looking at a parking garage versus looking at the nation's mall, it blew the DNC out of the water. And yeah, the DNC just went a whole into this Zoom stuff. And I also thought, I'm a biased guy, so take this as you will, listeners, but I thought that the overall speakers at the RNC were slightly better. There are three tiers, right? You've got your main people, the candidates, and like the vice president, right? Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, Trump, Pence. Then you got your tier two people that are like politicians that they're going to speak in favor of that. And then you've got your tier three people, which are just random people that speak to like support the Republicans or that. And I thought that like the tier three speakers for the Republicans, it was better than the Democrats. I thought they had really captivating stories. I really liked, I think his name is Maximo Alvarez, who is a Cuban guy, gave him the speech for Trump. And I thought it was really, really powerful when he was like, you know, there's nowhere else to go, right? If we fuck up America, if we turn this into a socialist hellscape, right? Where are we going to go? There's nowhere else you can migrate to. There's nowhere else to escape to. It was a great speech. Highly recommend people watch it. So overall, I thought the RNC was more effective than the DNC. And here's the final proof, right? You don't need to take it from me, a partisan. Watch the Twitter feeds of the media people. And they really were looking for things to attack the RNC on. Like they attacked Kimberly Guilfoyle over her kind of over the top speech. And then they were going on about the Hatch Act and Trump. It's like, nobody cares. Sorry, I shouldn't swear. But there were all these like, they just didn't have any real like good hard line of attacks, which to me proves that the RNC had a more effective convention. Here's the other point, and this might be veering off to another topic, but the polling shows a 4 to 5 point bounce for Trump in support, right? Now, Biden's still in the lead, but it's converged. I know you have all the data, but you know that's me. The proof in the pudding, right? That's the proof in the pudding. The DNC, it didn't really do anything. It was kind of flat. The RNC polls Trump up, and a bunch of the big pollsters didn't release any polls, which to me I thought was kind of interesting. They were kind of quiet, but I'll turn it back over to you. But I thought it was a good convention. Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. It was really solid.
So to your last point, I just right before the episode started, because obviously I'm a big data analytics pollster type guy, I went back to see when the big media outlets released their polls after the Democrat convention.
Oh, wow. This is interesting analysis. This is high value. Okay, keep going.
I'm really very high value. And I just tweeted this right before the episode started. So I was of the belief, and I was expecting fully today, that on like Meet the Press, Face the Nation, this week on ABC, I was trying to think of what that was called, that all the big media outlets would release their big post-convention polls. Well, they didn't. So at first, on the surface, I'm like, okay, well, that seems kind of questionable, especially with the things you talked about. The pundits didn't have a lot of negative things. They couldn't find a ton of negative things to come out of the convention. And one thing we'll talk about later, the betting markets have surged for Trump throughout both weeks of the conventions. And it's virtually 50-50 odds right now between Trump and Biden, which is remarkable.
Yeah, it's like
so. Yeah, it's crazy. So I will say this because, again, I was a skeptic. So in 2016, CBS and CNN didn't release their post-convention polls out till the Monday after. Then Fox released it the Wednesday after, NBC the Thursday after, and then ABC was a full 10 days after. So if, for consistency's sake, they are consistent again, we would expect maybe CNN and CBS to release their polls perhaps tomorrow. So we'll see. If they don't, then I think people should start asking why. I thought it was fascinating that ABC released a poll today where it was no head-to-head numbers. It was strictly favorability numbers. And that's another thing I'll say. You know they're polling head-to-head right now. They have to be seeing something. But it's questionable that they're only releasing favorability numbers as their talking point. It seems kind of questionable.
Right.
Dane, we were talking this week or messaging. I've been listening to Rich Barris, who
– He's a cool dude. He's a pretty cool dude. He's kind of like a weird dude, but he seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, he's got a nice show on YouTube every day from like 10 to 12. And it's interesting his perspective because he talks about economic data, but he also is a pollster as well. So he's been acknowledging that everybody's seeing it. They're seeing a tightening race. And I'm really curious to hear his thoughts tomorrow to see, A, I guess first to hear if he's continuing to see some tightening, and B, his thoughts as to why the other pollsters haven't. So that's that related to the pollsters. But to your point about like the tier three candidates of the RNC, I agree. One thing I really was impressed with and something that I was happy about was the Republicans' targeted efforts towards African Americans. For far too long, I think the Democrats just you know, Biden said it, like, if what was his quote? Something like, you ain't black if you don't vote for me or something like that.
What was it? You ain't black, Jack, or something.
Yeah, something, you know, crazy like that.
Yeah.
But the Republicans, let me take a step back. Kim Klasick, a candidate in Baltimore, released like a two and a half minute viral social media post video about last week during the DNC. And she has a very, very difficult task at her. I think she's either in, was it Elijah Cummings district or John Lewis? I'm not sure. One of those two black congressmen who had passed away this year. It's that district in Baltimore. She has a very uphill task, but she ran a really good social media video highlighting the Democrats' failures in inner cities and how it's impacted black Americans. So I was encouraged to see the RNC go after African-American voters this week. Just a few names that ring a bell: Herschel Walker, Vernon Jones, Senator Tim Scott, Daniel Cameron, who
the Attorney General
from Kentucky, who spoke very eloquently. I was really, really impressed with him.
Yeah, he for a young guy, right?
Yeah, very young. He blew
it out of the water.
He has that charisma. He has that. Obviously, he's got a long way to go in politics to. But I would see down the road, maybe in 8 to 12 years, him being a possible candidate nationwide, perhaps sooner. But I would think 8 to 12 years. Alice Johnson, who I believe just received a pardon on Friday from Trump, and that was related to criminal justice reform. So targeted effort for there, which I was happy about. Then the other thing is just the fact that the DNC had so many celebrities. I thought the RNC did a much better job of getting average Americans to tell their story. They had that they had a number of business owners from across the country, but they had a targeted effort for people in Minnesota, Wisconsin. I think they even had a lot.
Minnesota, yeah, the Iron Range.
Farmer for Maine. Again.
Oh, yeah, he was cool.
The lobster guy. And those are areas, especially Minnesota, New Hampshire, Maine. Those were the three next states that Trump barely lost. I think he lost Maine by 3, New Hampshire by 3,000 votes, so less than a point, and Minnesota by, I think, one and a half points. So yeah. I'm happy to see that they were going after that. I guess one last point. At first, when I saw the list of speakers, I wasn't overly impressed because I saw a lot of the Trump names, and they're good speakers. I'll give them credit. I'm very impressed with their speaking ability. Ivanka Trump had a very good quote, which really is emblematic of this administration and the fact that media still doesn't get him. And she said it was, Washington has not changed Donald Trump. Donald Trump has changed Washington. And I think that's something that I struggled with initially before he even became president. And I think the media has continued to fight him over that. I think they want him to be different. But Donald Trump just, you know, obviously it's like a big two middle fingers to them. He's going to do it his way, which I thought was fascinating. But overall, to cap it off on the RNC, I was encouraged with what I saw. You know, regardless of where the ratings are, I think they did a much better job of getting the base fired up, which is important. And then secondly, I think nights probably 1 through 3, I think they did a much better job of broadening their appeal, maybe to some to the independents, maybe soft Republican support who maybe been over the summer on the fence, kind of where they wanted to go, especially after the social unrest back in what was that, May, June timeframe. So
yeah, end of May.
June. Yes. So I think overall, very, very encouraged with that. Obviously, I'm a Republican, but again,
are you?
Yes. But I will say this fun fact: in 2008, John McCain, I actually had this website back then. I actually had a very, very sad excuse of a radio show at the time. Anyhow, I fell asleep during John McCain's speech. It was a weak speech.
I actually remember it. I remember
the end. It was like, nothing is inevitable here. Stand up and fight with me. I remember the end. I really enjoyed the end of McCain's speech, but I fell asleep midway through. I didn't think it was necessarily a great convention. Maybe same goes with 2012. So
just, I don't remember 2012 at all. I remember 2008 more than I remember 2012.
I just want to put that context in there. I'm not like overly, I'm not just going to say a bunch of pure red meat for the listeners, viewers.
I'll give you the red meat.
I'm just being a realist here. So I'll say that.
Here's the realist. We're undergoing a communist revolution in the United States and a coup d'etat. No, we'll get into that later. RNC was good. It was very good. It was solid. Given the circumstances, I think they did a great job. I think it was a success. I think, and this is maybe venturing into the next topic, right? There's a lot. Things have changed, right? The vibe has changed. I remember a couple episodes back when we had like our only guests on the show. I was kind of saying like, guys, Trump is losing. I think he's losing by double digits. I think it's real. I don't feel good about this race. Like this is really bad. Like Trump is going to get blown out of the water, right? That was, I think, as recently as like June, July. I don't know when we had that episode.
July. Yes. I think July. It was early July.
And I believe that, right?
I agree.
Maybe
with you
I'm
too.
Drinking the Kool-Aid now, but everything has changed. And Trump has all the momentum, right? As George H.W. Bush once called the Big Mo. And the whole vibe, to borrow a term from the Zoomers out there, the vibes of this race have completely changed. The narrative of the race has changed. The structure of the race has changed. Everything's changed. And Trump has all the momentum, right? And I think the RNC was just, it wasn't the cause of it, but it helped facilitate this shift in vibe, right? Excuse me. If the RNC were a disaster, the return or the Trump recovery would have been stopped in its tracks. But the fact that it went so well, fired up the base and really got them motivated. And I think really it made people believe things are starting to turn around. This race is starting to turn around. Trump can win this. And in fact, he may even be winning. That's the crazy thing. And, you know, it happened before the RNC. It happened during the RNC. And it's also happened after with these Kenosha riots and these riots in Portland, which we'll get to. But the whole narrative of this race has just completely shifted and changed. Completely, in my opinion. And I now think, like, I think Trump could have lost Ohio or been very close in June. I think he's going to win Ohio. I feel like he's got the momentum. I'm seeing polls, right? He's leading in Michigan, according to one poll. He's tied in Minnesota, according to a poll. I've seen some polls where he's like only a couple points behind in Pennsylvania. And here's the key thing. It's not so much, you know, what the poll number says, you know, 47, 53 or anything like that. It's the momentum in the shift. Because if you remember in 2016, you know, Hillary was leading in the swing state poll. Sometimes by as high as 5 or 6 points, and Trump still won, right? So to me, if I'm in the Biden campaign, unless Biden is leading in a swing state by more than 5 points, I'm not feeling comfortable because who knows what can happen. And the fact that Trump has narrowed the battleground delta to like 2 points shows that he's coming back. And I think he's coming back because the left, they blew it. They blew it. The Democrats are blowing this. The Democrats, if you're a Democrat and you're watching the show, you're blowing it, okay? Burning down Kenosha, Wisconsin is not going to bring racial harmony. What are you trying to do? Like, stop for a second. What are you trying to do? The only thing that helps by burning down Kenosha is the megacorps like Amazon, Walmart, et cetera, because you just destroyed all small business and you drove up the insurance prices for small businesses for like a little blue collar town in Kenosha. Like, what are you doing? What is the Democratic Party? What do you stand for? How hard is it for Joe Biden to be like, I unequivocally condemn rioting. I condemn violence. The country needs to come together. We need to put all this besides ourselves. You know, I feel like if I'm just speaking as Biden, there might be racial injustice, there might be police brutality, but we must resolve these issues within the framework of law and order, and peaceful disobedience, and civil society, right? But he can't even say that because A, he has dementia and he's weak and he can't make a complete sentence, and B, he is a total tool of the most extreme elements within his party. I mean, I don't know, how, like, this is not like, this is not a conspiracy theory or anything like that. Biden's completely out there, and he's afraid to alienate the DSA block, right? The Democratic Socialists of America. And he's afraid to put these people down and say, listen, I'll say one more thing. In Portland, that city has been undergoing riots for like 3 months now. Okay. Portland, by the way, is 96% white. So it's not like this is for an organic uprising of oppressed black Americans, right? These are Antifa. A lot of these Antifa people, if you look into it, they're pedophiles, they're criminals, they're drug dealers and that. They're just total vagrant scum. Right. They've been rioting for the past 3 months. Donald Trump asked the mayor, like, look, do you want me to send in military reinforcements? Right. As soon as you send in the troops, things get calm. Kenosha, it got calm after they sent in the troops. Minneapolis, you send in the National Guard, things quiet down, right? Nobody wants to F with the National Guard. The mayor, Ted Wheeler, wrote this little nasty grand letter where he's like, no, we don't need you, Donald Trump. Love Trump's hate. Love Trump's hate. And now somebody is dead. Somebody is dead, right? A Trump supporter that was out there is dead because somebody disagreed with him politically. That's disgusting. Okay. That's totally disgusting and wrong. And to me, it's like, what is the Democratic Party doing? This is just insanity. I don't know. I'm so mad about it and disgusted. It's reprehensible. And then you have those pricks in NPR who are running articles justifying looting and violence. Let me alert something to you. If you think you're a revolutionary by burning down small businesses and medium-sized businesses, you're not. You're only helping the rich and powerful get even more rich and more powerful. Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, they don't care if you burn down small businesses. That's their competitors. Anyways, sorry, Michael.
Dan got fired up there on the civil unrest. Yeah. I'm with you, though. It's crazy. I think what's interesting is, so there was a march on Washington yesterday, and I'm just throwing this out there because I saw it this morning. And one of the things they complained about at the RNC was at Trump's speech, there wasn't any social distancing. I'm of the belief those people are at the White House. They probably were tested.
Who cares?
Oh, I understand. Yeah. But if that's the worst they have on them, you know, Trump did something right. But what's fascinating is they like to complain about social distancing at the RNC, but they had zero complaints about the march on Washington. They have zero complaints again about the protest. And it was great. They had a doctor on CNN who apparently was a failed Democrat congressional candidate who was on there saying that it's okay that there is essentially a lack of social distancing at the march on Washington because they're fighting for essentially like a just cause.
They're fighting for it's a social health crisis. Police brutality or whatever it was, systemic racism, that's the new buzzword. Systemic racism is a public health crisis. And, you know, protesting that trumps the pandemic. They can go fuck themselves. So I'm serious. Like, this makes me so mad, right? There are people, John Lewis had a massive funeral. Why? Because he's politically powerful and well-connected. But like in some states where this is still going on, if your father dies or your mother dies or your sister, guess what? There's a hard limit. You cannot bury the dead, right? One of the most basic human functions because of this pandemic, right? And I should actually say because of rules over this pandemic. John Lewis had a massive funeral. I think George Floyd also had a massive gathering. I don't know where they buried him, but I think that there was a big massive gathering.
Yeah, I think there was a couple services for him across the country, actually.
Yeah, I saw on Facebook somebody's like, his wife is pregnant, and this is really heavy, right? His wife is pregnant and he can't go to the sonogram to see the baby. He can't go to like the ultrasound, right? Because of COVID-19 stuff. But you can go to a mass riot and burn stuff down and loot and nobody condemns you, right?
They are a bunch of hypocrites.
Totally. Totally right.
So there was another thing I wanted to say regarding what Dane had just said. And Mike Chernovich, who is a political, we'll say commentator, had tweeted recently within, I think it was the past hour. He said, Democrats are on the defense. Biden rides took away 5% of the support at least. Now, I don't know where I think he's just pulling that number out of the air. But I will say this. There was no plans for Biden to go about leaving the basement. That strategy was what they thought they were working. But it's like a freight train just came blowing right through past the basement, the Trump train, and now they're slow to react. And now they're trying to figure out what to do. Well, they're getting him out of the basement, which is, I guess, somewhat encouraging.
That's great news.
Yeah.
He's going somewhere on Monday. Where is he going?
Well, he initially, I thought I heard – now, Trump is going to Kenosha, Wisconsin tomorrow.
Tuesday. No, Trump's going Tuesday. Tuesday. Okay.
The initial talk was Biden was going to go tomorrow, but he's not going to go.
He's going somewhere though on Monday.
Yeah, I believe he is.
We don't know.
I'm not sure where. But it's interesting. They completely changed their strategy from hide Biden to why is he having to come out of the basement now? I mean, this is what he did for the past 4 or 5 months. It's just fascinating. I think after, and this wasn't just, again, this was not the necessarily the result of the RNC. The tightening of the race happened before the DNC. Remember, two episodes ago, we were talking about a CNN poll having a 4-point race nationwide and Trump doing very well with independents. Those numbers are, again, another poll came out today that had Trump up by 10 points with independents. There has to be grave concern, especially in the battleground states. Regardless nationwide what the numbers look like, if Trump wins independents in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin, perhaps even into Minnesota, New Hampshire, other swing states, Florida, he's going to be tough to beat. And the Republican, again, what's very important is Trump has the enthusiasm at edge right now. Right. And that's critical because, you know, when you look at like a likely voter model, you could rely on Trump's support. They're going to go out to the polls. Some might do absentee, like my beautiful wife. I'm going to vote at the polls on election day here.
I am too.
But he has some, he definitely has the Democrats on the defense. And it's just interesting to see them change their strategy right before our eyes. And again, why are they changing their strategy? It's not like, again, CNN, any of these big pollsters have come out with anything. Clearly, to me, both sides see the internals and they see something taking place. Yes. I'm not sure what it is, but if I were the Democrats, I'd be very concerned right now with a state like Michigan, or not Michigan, take that back, Wisconsin and Minnesota, based on what has happened in Kenosha. It is not a winning strategy for him, which is interesting because early on, all this social unrest hurt Trump. I mean, his numbers cratered. We complained about his reaction. I don't want to say like I want this to be a benefit for Trump, but the idea of law and order and these Democrat mayors and the governors refusing the federal assistance, it's remarkable. And it's becoming a strategy that's going to benefit Trump.
So here's the way I view it, right? This is what's changed, is that the stuff in Wisconsin, in Minneapolis and Portland, Oregon, and that, the Democratic mayors and governors are letting it happen. They are facilitating this violence because all they would have to do is call in the National Guard and it would solve it, right? I understand you have one night of violence, right? And nobody foresees it. The police get overwhelmed. Day two, you call in the guard and you keep the guard there for the next few days until things calm down. But both the governor of Wisconsin and the mayor of Portland, they have these smarmy statements where they're playing partisan politics. And they're like, President Trump, keep your fascists out of here, right? Trump had troops or federal marshals were to protect federal property, which is their right and prerogative. I'm sorry. You know, you don't have a right as a protester to burn down federal property. I'm glad there's people armed. And then Trump got so much flack for it. Like, oh, he has unarmed and unmatched troops taking people off the streets. They weren't unnamed. That's what it was. They were secret police. They weren't secret police, right? Like that was total nonsense, right? And now, like, the inaction of these feckless leaders is leading people to die. And it's
especially
just mind-boggling
in Portland,
The one in Portland, and in Wisconsin too. Though Wisconsin too, because you know. I think it's becoming trendy. This is what's really, really scary, is that it's kind of becoming trendy in left-wing social circles, as evidenced by that NPR article, that looting and violence is okay, that it's good, that it's a just and righteous reaction to brutality or whatever it is, right? And the reality of the situation is that the people who get caught in the middle are innocent people. It's small business owners who have every single right to defend their property. Why do we have government? We don't have government to have like diversity training classes mandated in every school, right? The fundamental reason we have government is to protect our life and our property, right? Those two things. And so we institute government to adjudicate disputes and to have force and to have authority and protect our life and property. And if government cannot do that, if they willingly abdicate that role, then that government is wrong and it's illegitimate and they should be called out. It's not like there was a big earthquake and it's chaos and there's looting in the aftermath of the earthquake, right? And people are trying to restore order. This is literally the governor is just like, oh, well, you know, people are mad. People are mad. I can't do a very good Wisconsin accent. And what are they putting down Kenosha for? Some guy who, by all accounts, is a terrible human being, right? Who was like he had kids in the car, and they weren't under his custody, I don't think. I haven't seen that question answered. Was wrestling with the police. And then if you watch that video, he walks away from the police, turns his back on them. When they have their guns on, they're like, sir. And then he gets in the car. I think he had a knife on him. He gets in the car and opens the door like he's just going for a Sunday stroll. And then they shoot him. And people are like, well, you know, the police, they shouldn't use force to resolve things. No, they shouldn't. This wasn't like, hey, you know, is it Monday or Tuesday? Blam, blam, blam. This is, you know, sir, please put up your hands, right? The police, they're acting on a lack of information. They don't know what he has. They don't know if he has a gun in that car. They don't know if he's going to jump in that car, drive away and kill innocent people. They have to assume the worst. It's sad, but it's the reality. And when, you know, when they make the decision to use force to neutralize the target, you know, they should be very reluctant to do that. But once that's decision made, you got to do what it takes to take out that person, right? Well, they shot him 7 times in the back. No, I'm sorry. Once you start firing a gun, you don't stop, right? Until that target is completely neutralized. And I feel bad. Was the guy an idiot? Like, what was he doing? I think there are 1,000. I saw this number. I'm going to say 1,000 incidents where police kill people that they're arresting out of millions of police interactions between citizens and the police every day. It is a basic standard of knowledge that when the police ask you to do something, you comply. If the police abuse their roles and their authority, which they can do because they are human beings, then you should go to courts and get that fixed, right? But this was a clear case where, you know, the police were, he was going for something. They had to act quickly. I don't know. And now we burned down Kenosha. Like, why is this? This isn't a radical right-wing position. This is just a radical, like, basic civil authority. You can't have all the wonders of civilization if you don't have basic civil authority and the rule of law. That's what this means, is that, you know, when you're upset about something, you don't just burn down stuff. You go and you protest, or you have a court case or whatever it may be. I don't know. Sorry.
I don't mind. Hey, before I share my thoughts, my comments, there's somebody in the chat asking who the sponsor is for tonight.
Oh, the sponsor, you missed it. The sponsor for tonight's show is Bella Italia. It's the Aldi's.
Oh, that's right.
Chef Boyardee Mini Raviolis. It's a great brand. It's really solid. Yeah, you missed it. I'm sorry. But we do have a sponsor, Bella Italia. I think it means beautiful Italian.
David, and I Italian. Typically see eye to eye on most things. It seems like somebody who's part of my blood is Italian. I don't know if I could agree with that. Dave, let me ask you this. Go off on a tangent. Are you a big Olive Garden guy?
No, not at
okay.
all.
Okay, we,
no.
Okay.
No, listen, it's like 9 o'clock. I didn't want to make my wife cook. I had some stockpile food, and some of them were mini raviolis. And did I microwave some mini raviolis and eat them? Yeah. If that's a crime in America, then, you know, sign me up. I'm sure some radical college professor is going to say that we're culturally appropriating the Italians by eating mini raviolis, and that, you know, I should cancel it or something. I don't know, some stupid nonsense, just as stupid as burning down Kenosha, Wisconsin. Here's the irony. When you burn down Kenosha, you're not challenging the system, right? You're just reinforcing the control of mega corporations. There are no Walmarts being burned down. Walmart can survive this. Amazon, right? They're all fine. You just destroyed small businesses. You just destroyed somebody's like livelihood. You know, some middle class guy, he's got a couple $1,000 in the bank. He's kind of getting ahead. You just destroyed it. These people are disgusting. I'm sorry. So, you know, that's this mindset, what I'm articulating, I think is why a lot of people are voting for Trump, because it's like, fuck you guys. Okay. This is the other thing the left does. They declare anybody that they don't like, they declare them a Nazi, right? And then they've also normalized
the idea. They throw all those words out. Sexist, yes. Nazi, misogynist, whatever.
Right. Else. Whatever they did, if you disagree with them, you're a Nazi. And they've also at the same time normalized punching Nazis and killing Nazis, right? And I'm not here to defend Nazis. I'm not a Nazi. I'm of British heritage. We fought the Nazis. But the problem is you cannot normalize implementing political violence against people you disagree with. If that makes me a radical right winger, then so be it. You know, Nazis have the right to freedom of speech. Okay. And the reason why is because there are a lot of people that will disagree with you. And if you just throw that label on them, that doesn't give you the right to shut somebody up. So sorry, I've been going on too long, Michael. I'll turn it back.
No, you're good. And this is something I know you wanted to talk about. My thoughts on this is What's concerning to me, take the politics aside, people's lives are at risk. People's businesses are getting destroyed.
Yeah.
And we have politicians in this country who are putting party before their own people. And it's very concerning, these politically driven responses. You had the governor of Wisconsin who delayed requesting federal aid to stop the unrest.
And somebody's dead.
Yeah, somebody's dead. Because of that. And it's amazing because once he did request it, nothing's happened for the most part. From what I could tell, from what I've been reading, nothing's happened. It's been quiet. Then you have this a dereliction of duty in Portland. This great mayor. Phrase.
Yeah.
I don't know what on earth the guy's thinking. Like, just take a step back. It's not about you versus Trump. It's not about Democrat versus Republican.
It's not.
But that's what they're doing, and it's completely infuriating. And my point is, the reason I decided today of all, you know, I decided to put a Trump sign in my yard. I did not have a Trump sign in my yard 4 years ago.
I'm not allowed to because of the HOA. But keep going. Yeah.
No. Oh, you're not. Oh, that's unfortunate. So when I see this unrest, to see people in this country who think it's okay that when something doesn't go the way they want it to go, they could throw a brick through somebody's window or light a car dealership on fire or go in the face of our cops. I'm not looking. Listen, two wrongs do not make a right, folks. Okay. Can we have a rational discussion about things instead of having these emotionally driven, and they're beyond emotionally driven responses that we're seeing in these, when you resort to violence, like, what is wrong with people?
Yes.
It's you can't let that happen.
No.
And Trump, I think, is doing the right thing. Listen, he's given them the option. He's throwing it back on them. As much as he'd like to just go in there and just take over the city and control it, he's putting it on them. Do your job as leaders.
Right.
There's no harm in asking for federal aid, federal assistance to put a stop to this. And you continue – like in Portland, this has been going on for months. Like, what on earth is this mayor thinking? And like the left, from what I see on Twitter – I mean, this mayor had tons of retweets and likes for his letter that he wrote to Trump yesterday. It's like, come on, people. Like,
yeah.
Stop it.
Somebody is dead. Somebody is dead. We have 17-year-olds. And look, I don't think a 17-year-old should patrol the streets with an AR-15. I don't think so. But I think we have civil society and civil authority to prevent that, right? Here's what's really, really scary. And everybody at home watching this, you should listen to these words very closely. Violence begets violence, right? And I want to say 100% I disavow violence, especially for political means. I'm a man of the word. I'm a man of speech. That's how I want to resolve political disputes. I don't want to resolve them via violence. But violence begets violence. And the scary thing in America right now is what could happen is you get these tit for tat things, right? Where, you know, somebody dies in a police shooting. A 30-second clip is released. Everybody gets fired up. They assume that it's police brutality and they just murdered him, right? The later evidence that always comes out that it's far less damning for that individual or for the police, that always gets released like 2 weeks later and it's much quieter, right? Like the fact that George Floyd most likely died of an overdose of fentanyl and he had lots of drugs in his system and he was saying, I can't breathe prior to being arrested. That stuff came out very quietly and it came out later on, right? Most people don't know about that. But what's scary is people get ginned up, they protest. Then you have these Antifa groups coming in using the organic anger, right? The Antifa groups create real violence against the police, against authorities and stuff. And then innocent people, you know, die in the crossfires. And then what happens is eventually red state America or even purple state America, they're going to wake up, they're going to get guns and they're going to say, hey, I'm going to protect my property. I'm going to protect my home. I'm going to protect the fruits of my labor. And somebody dies, right? As what happened in Wisconsin, you know, a couple people died when they attacked that kid, that 17-year-old, or in Portland where that one guy got killed. And this is just wrong, right? This is just absolute. This is not America. We should not be resolving our disputes with violence in the street. And all it takes from Joe Biden is to say this is wrong. And he can't even do that because he's too weak. And I want to just reemphasize this. There is a group of radical leftists out there that if you're middle class, they hate you. It doesn't matter what race, color, or creed you are, right? they hate you and they hate everything you believe. And they are out there and they want blood and they're playing for keeps. And my problem with a lot of conservatives is that we think this is still like 1980, right? Where we're fighting against Mondale. And we keep saying, oh, liberals, they're just so dumb. You know, No, they control media. They control academia. They control a lot of these local and state governments. They control all the major cities. And this is like the beginnings of, and I know this sounds extreme, but like a proto civil war. It's a horrible situation. I'm not happy about this, but this is the reality that we have to face. And unless strong action is taken where we put these things down and we set up the National Guard and everybody simmers down a little bit, like my mini raviolis, right? They cool off. It's going to escalate. It's going to get worse and worse and worse. And there'll be more blood. And that's the worst thing that could absolutely happen. But people need to realize that that's coming.
So Gino DeFabia, who I do want to mention to everybody, he was featured in a video at the Republican National
Convention. I saw that with Mr. Pence. Congratulations. And yeah, I'm honored that he's watching. He's a celebrity.
Yes. So he put in the chat, how do the mayors and governors watch their cities burn and citizens and law enforcement attack night after night? You have to wonder when they feel enough is enough. And actually, there's something in there that I didn't even think about. How would you like to be a police officer in one of these cities when you have a mayor and a governor of your state who seem to be on the side of the people who are threatening you? Listen, I don't want to see anybody dead, regardless of where. I don't want to see a cop have to kill a suspect. I don't want to kill. I don't want to see white on black crime. I don't want to see black on black crime. I don't want to see people dead. At the end of the day, it happens. I don't want to see it. No. Dead. But I don't want to see this sort of reaction, especially when we don't know all the facts. That's my biggest issue with everything. We rush to judgment, and then somebody's judged in the court of public opinion, and obviously they're going to be guilty in this age with social media, and you're never going to have a true – I don't know. In the court of law – who's ever going to get a fair shake when you got all this nonsense thrown against the wall at somebody? So it's incredibly frustrating.
It is. And here's the problem, though, is that the people on the right have this sort of moral they're always apologizing, right? And I think there has to come a moment where people have to stand up and say, you know what? No, stop with the damn name calling, okay? What I believe in is not wrong. It's not evil. I'm not an evil person for daring to disagree with whatever nonsense the left is spouting at the particular moment, right? And we have to have the courage of our convictions, because it doesn't even take a majority. You know, the idea that you need to get 50% of the 51% of the people who agree with you, it's just false. Most people will go wherever there's force, right? But we just need a core group of people on the right that stands up and says, you know what, this is wrong. It's absolutely morally wrong. Let's stop using that dumb millennial phrase, it's not okay, right? And say what it really is, it's wrong. These riots that are going on night after night after night, the destruction to the cities, to small businesses, to downtowns, to men and women and children whose livelihoods depend on that, it's all wrong. And I'm sorry, they should be absolutely ashamed of themselves, right? That's the thing. The left wants you to feel, they want you to feel like you're constantly ashamed and you have to apologize. Don't apologize, okay? You know, there's nothing virtuous in burning down, you know, like Jim's tanning salon, right? You're not furthering the cause of racial equality when you blow up like some Greek diner, right? Or some Hispanic lawn care shop or something. You know what I mean? Like some immigrant just came out of this country 20 years ago. They started a small business, and then some, you know, yuppie Antifa guy is going to blow up their shop. It's just, it's horrible.
Anything else on this day?
No, we got some comments from Rick Myers.
He's right? Not happy with you.
You're trying to provoke. No, I'm not trying to provoke anything. You know, he said you're trying to provoke a race war. Police are not military. You rush to judgment. Projection is an aging thing. No, the facts are the facts, right? The facts are that we have seen riots in these nights. We've seen innocent people suffer and die. And by the way, it's not like the white people in the suburbs who are getting hit. It's the people in the cities and in that first ring who are oftentimes minorities themselves or immigrants who just started a business in that. But the race in that is irrelevant. The destruction of private property is wrong, and it's illegitimate, and it must be held, you know, it must be condemned. And look, Portland, Oregon is not a Republican stronghold. Okay. An innocent person just died for having the temerity of being a Trump supporter in Portland, Oregon, because they had a feckless mayor who was more concerned with scoring points. Okay. I don't want to see violence come to America, but we have to realize that a lot of the people on the left do. And I'm going to tell you one other thing. I'm going to tell everybody this. Okay. They see the poll shifting, and that's why they're starting that whole dumb post office thing that was going on, right? They know the polls are shifting, and they will do whatever it takes to delegitimize a Trump win, just like they did with the whole Russian collusion nonsense, right? Because they can't respect the democratic process. Every single time they lose, they say that, you know, it's the Diebold voting machines in 2004. It was Russia in 2016. Now it's going to be the post office in 2020. That's what they're doing. And they see the poll shifting, and they're getting the rhetorical ground prepared for people to get ready. Okay, I'm going to shut up. I went on too long.
One last point on this, and you're entirely right. This past week, Don Lemon. Was it Jake Tapper?
Jake Tapper.
I think, yeah. I forget who it was. They were on CNN, and they essentially said internally, this is something that sticks. I think kind of I'm paraphrasing here. They know that this unrest, the longer it goes, not even the unrest, but the rioting, the looting, which the media for early on loved to cover. And just the way it's being portrayed, like the guy on CNN the other night saying, oh, this is a peaceful, it's very peaceful. When you look behind him, there's a freaking building on fire. It's like, come on, people. They know. Yeah. They know deep down this is going to hurt. Trump goes to Kenosha, like you said, Tuesday, and I just confirmed that he is not canceling it despite the mayor of Kenosha requesting that he not come. I think he needs to give a really passionate speech on law enforcement and really hit it hard. I think it's important because this is going to be covered extensively, especially throughout Wisconsin and local media. And I think what he has to say will resonate with a lot of people. Again, I think people are going to put personality aside with Trump. In law enforcement, law and order, that strategy, I think, resonates with them. They see what's happening in Kenosha, like a city, I think, of 100,000 people. I mean, that could have been anywhere.
Yeah, it's a nice place. That's what's scary. It could have been anywhere. It's a nice little town, black, white. You know, it seems like a nice little place. It reminds me of Youngstown, to be honest, Michael. It reminds me a lot of Youngstown, Ohio, or Akron, right? Yeah. It's just kind of like this, like, medium-sized city, right? A small little city.
I mean, and honestly, the fear for a lot of people is, you know, across the country, typically you would find violence, propensity of violence to happen in inner cities. And obviously, there's still some violence in suburbs everywhere across the country. But like here where I live in Boardman, Ohio, when the unrest started in late May, early June, they freaking closed down the shopping mall, all the retail establishments, all the restaurants on a Sunday night. Like, that's in my own backyard. Like, never in a million years did I ever expect that to happen. Obviously, nothing happened, which was a good thing.
Right. Like, right.
People see – it's like you're normalizing this, which is concerning. Like, who would have thought 10 years ago, like, word. This – people throwing bricks through buildings in the name of whatever, social unrest, or they're trying to address it. It's crazy times.
And to be very clear, people have the right to protest, right? People have the right to gather. I mean, the Black Lives Matter movement, I disagree with a lot of what it says, but the people have the right to assemble and protest. And there's nothing wrong with that. And many of these protests, but to be clear, have gone off without a hitch, right? But we are at the stage now where, you know, it's hard to create the exact demarcation between the people that are protesting and the people that are looting. But what we can say conclusively is that there is looting going on. There are cities burning, right? Minneapolis is burnt to the ground. Kenosha has burnt to the ground. Portland has been looted. Downtown Cleveland, by the way, I work in downtown. It's a shell of what it once was. I have a friend of mine that used to work in the police department. He was talking to police. He said that the morale there is so low, you know? And I want to say one more thing. Cops have done more to save minority lives than the entire legion of the college professors and the like. This is what people should do, okay? Go and Google the U.S. homicide rate over time, okay? And look at, just to say, New York City. Look at any city in the country. Look at who was the victim of those homicides. It was mainly black men, okay? Not exclusively, though. Homicide rates have come down dramatically. Why have they come down, right? Did people decide to start to, you know, loving each other. No, the police tactics changed, right? And the police deserve a great deal of credit for saving thousands of lives, many of whom were Black and minority, right? But it shouldn't matter their race. They saved lives. They brought crime rates down, okay? And that is a fact which is never acknowledged. And I'm sick of the police being slandered. Are there bad police officers? Yes. Do some police abuse their power? Absolutely. Could we reform the police department? Sure. I think most police officers would say, yeah, there are a bunch of reforms we'd like to do. But are the police in America, by and large, decent, good, honorable people trying to protect, you know, their communities? 100% yes. And that statement, that shouldn't be a right-wing statement. This is my big point. This is why I'm losing my mind. That's not a controversial statement. A Democrat should be able to say that, right? But they have gone so far to the left that even saying that America is not like East Germany is a controversial point now. And I have no tolerance for it anymore. No tolerance whatsoever. Sorry.
All right. So we've said a lot, obviously, on the social unrest. So I did want to move on before we conclude the episode, talk on a couple things. We'll hit these kind of quickly. So polling, I said what I mentioned about the mainstream media, those types of polls coming out likely within the next few days. That'll really give us an idea of what kind of bounce bump Trump got out of the convention. Again, the ones we've seen thus far, it seems like 4 to 5 points, I think in 2 or 3 polls that have come out. So it's something to see there. But again, I think what we've been talking about the last couple episodes were the betting markets, where people's money's on the line. And at the beginning of the month, Biden had a 24.6% edge in terms of the odds of winning the election. As of 8 o'clock today, Biden was at 50.6. Trump was at 49.1.
Wow.
And let me see.
Wow. We've been following that.
Let me share the screen real quick and I'll show this to you just to see this nosedive. Here we go. So look at the cratering that has taken place. And as you saw, this was probably right here. In this range right here is when the Democrat convention started, I think somewhere in this range, and it just continued to close. And it's Trump is within, if the trends continue, which one would think it probably would, within a couple of days, Trump could possibly have better odds than Biden to win. But there's a huge disconnect right now because national polling still shows Biden up quite a bit. We'll get a better idea once these other 6-7 polls come out within the next week. But the battleground states are quite tight. And you mentioned Michigan, a poll came out. The pollster that actually nailed Michigan last time.
Trafalgar.
Yes, that the media loves to discount as they hype up their other sketchy polls like Quinnipiac. I think if you look at the averages right now in the battlegrounds and across all the battleground states, I think Biden's edge is down to like 2.4 points, something like that. In Real Clear Politics, they actually do an average. So this is a very tight race. And, you know, now you hear Nancy Pelosi talking about, oh, there shouldn't be debates, which I thought, again, stupid, but Dan called this a couple episodes ago. It's, I think Biden's lead, let's say his national lead's fragile enough that a very poor performance could really, really hurt his campaign. Like he hasn't, his whole basement strategy worked initially, but yeah, again, I think we've done a good job kind of seeing this a few weeks back, calling that sooner or later, they're going to have to start campaigning. COVID's really not the top story anymore in the news. It's much more the election now. And because of that, with Trump being able to go from city to city to city and campaign and Biden hiding in the basement, there's going to be something that's just going to look a little off. So, again, I find it fascinating that Biden's going out campaigning now much sooner than they initially thought. But it's a tight race. And, again, we've had multiple polls that show Trump up between 5 to 10 points with independents. Republicans come out, which you think they're going to do based on the enthusiasm. And the independents have that sort of edge. It's going to be very, in my eyes, very difficult for Joe Biden to win because he needs to have an enormous turnout. And Democrats aren't overly enthusiastic about him. It's about stopping Trump. And again, 2012, a lot of the Republicans weren't enthusiastic about Mitt Romney. They were anti-Obama, and it didn't really – obviously, he lost the election. So – I like where Trump's at. He's come a long way since early July when it did not look very good for him. And he's run a very disciplined campaign since then. Hopefully that continues. And yeah, it'll be really interesting. I'm really curious. National polls, take it for what it's worth. I really want to see a number of polls come out in these swing states. I'd like to see Ohio. I think right now I feel like Ohio is probably like a 4 to 5 point Trump lead.
Yeah,
I will say this.
I'd say maybe even more. Actually.
And this is kind of a good segue into the article from Selena Zito from the Washington Examiner about Mahoning County. Driving through, and I drove through Austintown today. Austintown, Trump barely lost it in 2016. A lot of Trump signs.
Wow.
Canfield, Canfield for sure has the most Trump signs.
Yeah.
As you kind of go closer to the city limits, sort of like around Cornersburg, you definitely see some more Biden signs there. But at least the areas that I've traveled, it's definitely much more in terms of Trump signs. And it's very encouraging to me that whether it's the National Republican Party or the state Republican Party, they are going after Mahoning County.
And they should.
Yes, absolutely they should. I think 2016 was encouraging, but I think what the Republicans, especially at the state level, got to say to the national Republicans would be, we won two huge state House and Senate races in Mahoning County in 2018. And that should be a very concerning fact for Democrats. Like I would love to like ask Dave Beatrice, the former chairman of the Mahoning County Democrat Party, like, do you really think Trump could win it? And I honestly do think he would probably think Trump could win this time. And he was the one who was going after the state Democrats in 2016, saying, he was screaming at the top of his lungs saying, you guys are missing this. Like, you know, this area is perhaps up for grabs. And Trump won Trumbull by what, 7 points, something crazy like that. So, go ahead.
I was just going to say, the beauty of it is to win Ohio, you don't even need to win Mahoning County as a Republican. You don't even need to win Trumbull. You just need to get it tight, right? And the fact that you can win it as a Republican, the Ohio Dems literally go down to three strongholds. Cleveland, clearly, downtown Columbus, and downtown Toledo, maybe downtown Cincinnati. So that's four. They'll have four little strongholds, right? But in order for them to win, they need to run up. They need to get Portage blue. They need to get Trumbull blue, Ashtabula blue, Mahoning blue. Right. They need to get Northeast Ohio bluish and then drive up the turnout in the city. So the fact that Trump could feasibly win Mahoning means there literally is no way Trump loses Ohio. Like, I don't imagine a scenario whereby the Republican wins Mahoning County.
Agree.
And 100%. Somehow loses it. It's just impossible. But here's I think the key point to keep in mind is if Mahoning is still pro Trump, or if Trump can win Mahoning, then the national numbers have to be wrong, right? And it's not that Mahoning County is the most important county, but it's just it's like a lot of other areas in America. And if it's going one way and we have that insight, then the other areas should be going that way. And then Biden's real lead isn't as strong as they make out to be. And I think, by the way, I think people realize that, like, Biden does not have a 9-point lead or a 10-point lead, okay? He doesn't. He might have like a 2 or 3 or 4 point lead. I'm willing to accept that. But he doesn't have a 10-point lead because Trumbull, Mahoning County would not be as close as it is. And by the way, I drove through Trumbull County today, saw lots of Trump signs, more Trump signs in Noon Falls, which used to be a blue-collar, blue Democratic area, is now going Trump, right? So if Austintown is swinging, then the whole area is going to go red.
Yeah, I think what's encouraging, if you read the article, I posted on our MB Red podcast Facebook page. It's a good, interesting article, but especially like with in terms of signs and organization. This time they say Tom McCabe, chairman of the Mahoning County Republican Party, talks about how much more organized they are this time, and how 4 years ago they really weren't organized and they nearly won here, and how this time they're much more organized. They have a bigger push to, obviously, with anybody coming in, to get a sign, get it out there. You mentioned a great point though with Ohio, how it is like the various markets. To provide some listeners some context who might not be from our area, you know, historically speaking, Mahoning and Trumbull County went typically to the Democrat candidate with 58, I think, like maybe in 2004 when Kerry lost. It's up to 63 when Obama like Clinton. So that's like a 58-63% of the vote. Hillary Clinton got what, 44% in Trumbull, and then maybe 47-48% in Mahoney.
Maybe 49 in Mahoney, 44 in Trumbull.
Yeah, something along those lines. And it's not like these are small counties. Like Mahoney County is the 12th largest county in the state. Trumbull's the 15th largest county. These aren't like overly small counties. So, you know, you may have been netting, I don't know, let's say 15, 20,000 votes in each county, something like that, however many people actually came out to vote in them, perhaps even more. You have to make those votes up elsewhere. And with so many other counties going more red, like Columbiana County just to our south, it's like – that used to be a 50-50 county, but 20 years ago, it went like, 75% to Trump?
Yeah, it's like redder than Geauga now.
It's not a very large county, but again, still, you have enough of those counties that Trump wins by 8, 10, 12,000 votes. It completely offsets the big margins that he gets in Cuyahoga and Franklin, Lucas County, Harrison County.
Is Harrison Cincinnati?
Yes, Harrison, Cincinnati. But what's fascinating about Cincinnati is the counties directly around it are extremely red and very heavily populated. I think Claremont County is just to the east. Yeah. And I don't have the numbers up in front of me, so I apologize. But like Trump won about like 50, 60,000 votes.
Yeah.
And you go to the county directly to the north of Harrison County, you add those two up, they completely offset Harrison County. So you like those two counties alone just completely eliminate Harrison's margin.
The Cleveland suburbs are very blue. Well, it's changing, but the Cleveland suburbs are probably the bluest of all the suburbs in Ohio. Pepper Pike, Beechwood, I think are pretty blue. Mayfield Heights, all that, those areas are blue on the east side. The west side a little redder. Warrensville Heights, Bedford Heights, I think are all pretty blue. I'm curious, Chagrin Falls, by the way. I've noticed also, my wife and I went to Hudson, and we went to Chagrin Falls, which are both kind of affluent little towns, all Biden areas. You go to the more working class areas, all Trump. Like there's a great realignment happening where the Republicans are becoming, and this makes me so happy and proud, they're becoming the party of the working class and the working man. Doesn't matter what color you are, doesn't matter man or woman. You know, as long as you're an American and you fly that flag, that's the Republican Party is going to fight for you. It's happening slowly, but it's happening. And if you're like a rich, stuck-up snob, right, they used to vote Republican. Now they're increasingly voting Democrat. They're transitioning. It's great. It's great.
Yeah.
I'm glad. I'd gladly sacrifice Hudson if I pick up Youngstown. I'd make that trade any day of the week.
Absolutely. And again, that's – take it back to the convention. That's why I'm happy they were going targeting that effort towards like African American. There's plenty of working class African American voters, plenty of working class Hispanic voters.
And,
you know, I read the numbers right before the episode, and we'll get back because I want to talk about Christina Hagen's campaign against Tim Ryan. I'd have to pull it up, but Hillary won African Americans like 89-8. If Trump picks off just 5%. Of the gets 5% additional from and takes it from the Democrat, he nets 1.5 million votes according to the numbers and how the exit polls worked. 1.5 million votes. Now that's not enough to necessarily eliminate Hillary's margin in 2016, but let's say in 2020, 1.5 million votes, especially where they're located, those aren't probably in a lot of the Republicans like in the Great Plains. You're not going to see a ton of African American votes there, but maybe in like a Michigan.
It matters. Yeah, Wisconsin. It matters.
Wisconsin.
Ohio. Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. Pittsburgh. Yes. Philadelphia.
That's it matters.
Huge. It's huge. Especially like around Pittsburgh, like working class, like depending on what they do, whether it's working a steel mill or working in the oil industry. I mean, that's critical. And I think it's really encouraging that they're going after that. They don't need to win it, but just to pick off. Five.
Yes.
If they got anything more than 5%, it would be huge. But 1.5 million votes nationwide is critical.
In Hispanics, right? Yes. The way you win Hispanics is not by – see, this is what really gets me on the left. I treat people of other races and that as Americans, as fellow citizens. And I assume that they are – and this is shocking, right? That they have the same interests and desires and wants as me because they're human beings. I'm a human being. You're a human being. It doesn't matter what color you are. You want to see your family do well. You want to see – you know, you want to have a home, you want to provide, right? And it's these policies that have to fight to you, not because you're Hispanic or Black or anything like that, but because you're a human being and you're a fellow citizen and you deserve rights and respect because of that nature of that citizenship. And that's the Republican Party message. And that's what's so strong. And if we become a party of the average man and the working man, I keep saying man, woman too, right? Not to be politically correct, but women work very hard. If we become a party of the average person, right, we win Hispanics. We start to win Black Americans in that. Not because we're pandering to them and trying to sell out and trying, you know, Jeb Bush is trying to awkwardly speak Spanish, right, to them. It's because we're representing their hopes and dreams. So I'm 100% with you. You know, you had one of the commenters said that I'm trying to start like a race war. Nothing could be further from the truth. The truth of the matter is, with all these riots and all this nonsense that's going on, with the burning down of the cities and all of that, it's destroying working class Americans of every race, color, and creed. And let me be very clear. The rule of law protects minorities, whether they're ethnic minorities, whether they're racial minorities, whatever type of minority, religious minorities, the rule of law fights for you. And when you use force and violence to get your way, as the left is doing now, that undermines the rule of law and that undermines the protections for you. You know, there's a great line in A Man for All Seasons, right? Where Thomas More is talking to somebody, and I can't remember the other character. And the other character said, you know, I would chop down every tree in the forest to get to the devil. Right. I would burn down all the laws to get to the devil, to root it all out. And then Thomas More asks him, and when you've destroyed all those laws and the devil turns to face you, who will be protecting you? Right. With all these riots and with all this violence. And this is why I get so mad. And I'm sorry I alienated one of your little buddies. It destroys the fabric of America. And that's why all of this. That's why if Trump wins, Trump's going to win because he's fighting. It's not about the minimum wage or it's not about trade policy. It's not about any of those. It's about the basic rules of the game, which have become under assault in Portland and Kenosha and Minneapolis and Cleveland and New York and Chicago and all these other major cities. Okay. I'll go back to you, Michael.
No, that's fine.
Is it Bob Hagen time?
Yeah. Well, right before Bob Hagen, let's talk about the other Hagen. So I wanted
okay,
to share
Christina
real quick
Hagen.
On the screen. So to give you an idea of the 13th congressional district, again, Tim Ryan's running. He ran for president of the United States.
What a dork. Sorry, yeah. Go ahead.
But nonetheless, he's in a battle in his congressional seat that he never had a battle in. So right now, what I did was the colors are the 2016 election results by precinct. Because I'm that big of a nerd.
I'm going to really like look into this.
Yeah, I apologize how small this is. Wait, let me see if I could focus strictly.
There's your head.
Well, okay. Well, it's not getting any bigger, so I apologize. Nonetheless, the black border is the 13th district. As you see, it's really what I don't know what the hell they were doing it around Akron. It's literally street after street. At least out here in Mahoning County, they did township by township. Anyhow, if you're thinking of this, you probably have you obviously have Kent State University, you have Youngstown State. Not that Youngstown State is more of a commuter school. You got inner city Youngstown, inner city of Warren. You have parts of Akron in the suburbs of Akron, and then you have Kent. The rest of the district is pretty red. I mean, not all of this is big population areas, but I'd imagine, especially because I do think Trump's going to really – I think his margins in rural areas are going to even be greater this time, especially with the nonsense that's taking place in other parts of the country. You know, this is a Democrat district – that I think is D plus seven right now. At least it was in 2016, something along those lines.
Wow.
Trump lost it by 6 or 7 points. So, you know, again, if they're making a concerted effort, like in Mahoning County and elsewhere, especially in this area of Northeast Ohio, you can see why, with Christina Hagen being a legitimate candidate who has won before, why they think they might have a chance here. But again, to take a step back here, I'll have to share this with you, Dane. This screen there we go, or that map that is.
That was a cool map.
Yeah. So you have like Michael Chernovich, who big national political commentator.
How did you say his name?
I don't know. Is it Cernovich or Chernovich?
I think it's Cernovich. Like
Cernovich. Okay. Yeah. Chernovich. Whatever the hell. I'm going to butcher this guy's name. Is it Ryan Gerdusky or Gerdusky?
I think it's Gerdusky.
I feel like it's got to be Gerdusky. It just sounds better.
I do too. Yeah.
So you have Gerdusky. Again, you had Trump endorsing Hagen twice on Twitter and once in person. National GOP Twitter account highlighted her this past week. What else am I missing? You know, Tim Ryan ran a negative attack ad against her. She's received some different endorsements. So I did like private message that Gruduski to kind of like, hey, you know, does she have a legitimate chance type of thing? He said, absolutely. So, you know, with some of these tweets this week, there's three from three prominent Republican right-wing type Twitter accounts, leads me to believe that they're seeing something internally that makes them believe that this is a attainable race. And again, maybe it's single digits. Who knows? Curious your thoughts, Dane.
Yeah, no, a lot of outsiders to the Youngstown area have been mentioning Christina Hagan. Trump has mentioned her. I mean, you just went down the list. I think Tim Ryan is vulnerable because I think Tim Ryan is not a good politician. Just put aside the issue. He was a good politician, which is weird. Put aside the issue of Republican and Democrat for a second, right? There are people that are good at politics and there are people that are bad at politics. And Tim Ryan used to be very good at politics. If Tim Ryan were to stay a conservative Democrat, right, he would have the seat until he died. He could be like 1,000 years old and he would still occupy the seat. But Tim Ryan picked the strategy of like appealing to the far left of the Democratic Party. And even the Democrats locally, they're left wing, but they're not far left, right? And in doing so, I think he's alienated a wide swath of support. And it used to be people were really proud of Tim because he was like a young guy that kind of made it and people could identify with him. And there are a lot of people were like, you know, I'm not a Democrat, but I like Tim Ryan, right? That was the common refrain. And now he's just kind of a dork. And I think he really blew his political capital by running for president. I went to his launch party. That's a you fun did. Fact about Dane. I got
a great t-shirt out of it too.
And I just went to watch, right? Just to not I go to campaigns all the time. I go to a lot of Democratic campaign events, not because I'm a Democrat, but just because I enjoy taking it in. I enjoy the spectacle. And it had good food, very good food. But it was just weird. And he went nowhere. And it was like, why did you do that? I don't know. Tim Ryan easily. The fact that we have to spend so much time on this show talking about Tim Ryan, I think it's just the most depressing fact in the world. You know, it's almost, I don't want to say it's more depressing than all the riots and the collapse of America, but it's definitely a sign of like the collapse of America that Tim Ryan, such a mediocrity, is becoming mediocrity, I think, maybe, is absorbed so much of our time. He sucks, you know? Let's talk about a real champ. Let's talk about Bob Hagan. We talked about this.
We can't. One quick point, because did see Gino DeFabio had commented to Kevin Murphy in our chat about how in Mahoning Trump only lost by 3% to Hillary, and that he's saying Mahoning's going to red. I will say this. I hope to have Gino on in one of our future episodes. He's been doing a lot with Christina Hagan, and he's heavily involved with the Mahoning and Trumbull County Republican parties and would love to get his insight. I think he was even on Fox News this past week. So
yeah, he's a winner. He's way more alpha than either of us. We're total nerds compared to that guy. So right? I don't think he would go on our show. But
Gino, would love to have you on, you know, even if it's for part of an episode, just to kind of pick your brain on some things. Being that you're kind of on the inside in some ways and you're on the ground seeing things differently from me and I don't know, Dane, you might be on the ground, you know, from time to time looking at or going door to door. I don't do that. So would love to get his feedback. But Gino might want to comment on this next thing, which you're going to talk about with Bob Hagan.
Bob Hagan. Can we, this is the end of the episode.
This is the end of the episode.
Okay. Bob Hagan, Buckwheat Bob. Bob Hagan used a racial slur against a black man at the Lemon Grove about 10 years ago.
The Lemon
Horrible,
Grove.
Right. Horrible. You know, what's the difference between Bob Hagan and Dane Davis? Well, Bob Hagan uses racial slurs against people and Dane doesn't, right? Because I love everybody. Bob Hagan is a huge alcoholic, right? He's a total washed up thing. And the reason why I'm mean to Bob Hagan is not because he's a Democrat, right? I want people to be very clear. I know I'm a very partisan person, but I can respect people of both parties. The reason I'm mad at Bob Hagan is because, you know, the people of the Youngstown area are good-natured people. They've gone through a lot. They have good souls. They're hardworking people. And he's such a moron. And he's represented them for so long, he's given them a bad name. And that really offends me. Anyways, he recently got into a Facebook flame war. It's like, you're in your 60s, you know, like, go retire, boomer. Listen to Creedence Clearwater Revival. Watch the DNC for the 8th time because you T-voted it. And just, you know, go off into the sunset. But instead, Mr. Bob Hagen was getting involved in a flame war against somebody where, what was it? Hold on. I have to pull this up. Hold on.
Was he going after Gino DeFabio?
No, he wasn't. He was going after some woman.
Oh, yeah.
He was going after some person, right? Some innocent person. Hold on. I'm going to pull this up, folks. Stay tuned, because this is big. This is really, really big. Gosh, I gotta pull it up. If anybody has the link.
While you're doing, I did want to chime in. Kevin Murphy had commented, he's happy that we're having this dialogue, and he says how many will disparage you for your view. I guess we got a little bit of that from Rick Myers tonight. Your views are worth it. For many, you are bringing a new perspective that has new legs and embrace a new view. Appreciate that, Kevin. And clearly that there are white, educated, college-educated millennial Republicans out there.
We do exist. We're not horrible people. Look, I just want a country with basic rule of law that works for all citizens, regardless of race, creed, color, or class. I want a country where a working class person without a college degree can get a nice little plot of this earth and call it home. I want a country where the police are not demonized. They protect our streets, right? I want a country that works. And we can disagree how to get there, but I don't think, you know, Antifa throwing Molotov cocktails in Portland is going to get us there. Okay, so I pulled up the quote. So Bob Hagen, it's a Facebook flame war. There's a woman named Mindy Nelson. Okay, and these are his words, and I want to be very clear, I'm quoting him. And I quote, Mindy Nelson, "Dear Dick woman, I want to talk like Trump so you understand. He went to work and keep his job. You know nothing about GM and Lordstown, but you say shit about me and suck the hind tip of a guy that can't put a sentence together. Ha ha ha, seriously." To which Miss Mindy Nelson replied, "Bob Hagen, your maturity has me in absolute awe, and to think I was trying to use simple words so you'd understand. All your gutter and trash talk aside, you still haven't answered my question about when I said anything misogynistic or racist. Instead, you spew a bunch of misogynistic vulgarity at me. LOL. Or were you trying to show me you looked up the word? Good job, Bob. Progress. Attaboy. By the way, I realize you must be taking instruction," and then it cuts off. I don't get to see the rest of it. But Bob Hagen had an episode. He attacked some Facebook commentator. And I think it's sad. I think it's really sad. And I think that, you know, the people of the Youngstown area deserve better. That's my point.
Gino has chimed in the chat. He is an ignorant
has been.
He's the reason that this is the valley that time forgot. In fact, when Hagen was in the House, the Speaker, he was in majority, wouldn't take his call. That's Bob Hagen.
It's shameful. It's shameful. You know, I think part of the problem with our society today is that we play to the lowest common denominator, right, in all aspects. And the people of decency, the core of this country, the middle class, are passive. And they're too cowardly, and they back down, and they refuse to call out morons when they see it. So God bless people like Gino that calls out Bob Hagen for being a total moron, because he is. He is. You know, this isn't a Democratic issue. This isn't a Republican issue. You can believe in Karl Marx all you want, but black or white, gay or straight, can we come together and say loud and proud, Bob Hagen is a total moron? And I think that's enough. That's it. I'm done. That's the episode.
That is. So again, thank everybody for tuning in. Definitely thank everybody who will be listening to our podcast. Again, if you don't like us already on Facebook, please do. We've been posting a ton of stuff on there. So
active.
Yeah, very active. So definitely comment. We love that. And on Twitter too, I'm doing even more, and I'm trying to get. I do want to say I got retweeted this week by Jack Posobiec. I don't know if that's how you say his name. These people got some very difficult last names to pronounce. Anyhow, within like an hour, I got like 99 something retweets and 300 some likes. I was like going viral. I actually just posted a picture of the betting odds and he retweeted. Anyhow, so I'm trying to grow the Twitter account more. I do a lot of polling analysis. So hopeful that maybe I could get somebody from the outside of the area on to talk polling, which would be pretty cool. So definitely follow us there and then subscribe on your favorite podcast app. And we're 60 days out. People are going to be talking politics around the office and stuff at your jobs. So if they're like-minded people, and even if there are people who are not like-minded, please let them know about our podcast, because especially on a local level, we do a pretty good job of looking into that thing. And Gino did say, great job, guys, tonight. We would love to be part one evening. So we'll definitely take him up on that, and we appreciate him tuning in and all the good things he's doing. Any final thoughts, Dane?
My final thought is the people encouraging these riots should be absolutely ashamed of themselves. And it is wrong. And burning down businesses, animals destroy things that they don't understand. And, you know, I just want to say this. America was built by the creators, the builders, and the doers, not the destroyers. So all these people burning down stuff and killing innocent people because they dare to disagree with their own politics, you people are horrible. That's all I want to say. Other than that, have a good night.
Yeah, and my final thoughts are, I know this might be a week or two before we do another show. Watch the state polling, especially Ohio. Watch if something comes out in Ohio, 4 or 5 points. That way, you definitely know the states around us are trending. Watch Florida. Watch even Minnesota. Those types of states. Watch the betting odds, because I definitely think any day now, I think Trump might have the edge there, for what it's worth. But if anybody really wants some entertainment, go read Nate Silver and some of those other prognosticators who aren't buying it right now. And they are very high on these national polls, and there just seems to be this disconnect again. Very similar to 2016. The only difference is Trump's in much better shape in the battlegrounds than he was in 2016. And there is a very realistic shot he could win again the Electoral College and perhaps lose the national vote by even more because of certain states. So a lot to watch. This race is getting tight. And again, comment on our Facebook material, share it, tell your friends. We appreciate everybody's support. So
God bless you all. God bless America.
On that note,
hopefully we'll overcome.
We will conclude the episode. Thanks everybody for tuning in. Take care.
Thank you.